Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get three-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everyone, to SI Media with Jimmy Train. I thank you so much for listening. Back, we had the great Chris Mandog Russo on last week in a little bit of a return episode after a very, very brief hiatus. So if you missed that and you missed Mad Dog, check that out. Had great pods with Brian Curtis and Dan Orlovsky. Recent episodes. So if you missed any of those, check those out. Chris Mad Dog Russo last week, Brian Curtis, Dan Orlovsky were all recent guests on the pod. So check those out. Huge, huge show for you this week. First up, we have Jim Miller, the author and reporter who wrote books on ESPN and HBO to discuss a big shakeup at ESPN. Norby Williamson, senior vice president, out after 40 years. And then obviously the Curb Your Enthusiasm series finale. So we get into the state of ESPN, what's going on with ESPN. Norby Williamson's the guy that Pat McAfee had said some things about. So break that all down with Jim Miller, and then we get into the Curb finale. And then Dan Rappaport of the 4Play podcast on Barstool Sports joins me to discuss the Masters, heavy, heavy betting segment on the Masters. And then Sal Licata joins me for Train of Thoughts. First time in 3 weeks, we're doing a Train of Thoughts here on SI Media with Jimmy Train with Sal. So we catch up with him and get into a bunch of topics. So that's everything. If you are not a subscriber to SI Media with Jimmy Train, I need you to subscribe. Would love it if you rated the podcast on Apple and left a review and listened to some old episodes. All right, let's get into it. Jim Miller first up on ESPN and the Curb Your Enthusiasm series finale, followed by Dan Rappaport on the Masters and betting the Masters, followed by Sal Licata and Train of Thoughts, all right here, right now, on SI Media with Jimmy Trina. All right, joining me now, SI Media podcast regular, and there was no other person to have on this week because we had two major things happen. We had ESPN part ways with Norby Williamson after 40 years, and we had the Curb Your Enthusiasm series finale. So the man who wrote the book on ESPN and wrote the book on HBO joins us this week, Jim Miller. Jim, how are you?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Did you know the Norby thing was going to happen when it before it happened?
I'll take the fifth.
Okay. I think we can figure that out. Let's start with the ESPN. Before we even get into Norby, there's an ESPN thing that's going on that there's rumblings about that I find even more interesting than Norby. I'm just wondering if you could shed any light on it. I mean, it sure seems like we're setting up for ESPN Disney to swallow the NFL network. I saw tweets right before we started that there's going to be big crossovers for the draft where NFL Network people are going to be on ESPN, ESPN people are going to be on NFL Network. The NFL is making massive cuts to their television network with talent. They're moving Good Morning Football, ridiculous move, moving it from New York to LA because the NFL is crying poverty and doesn't want to pay rent in New York for a studio. And
yeah, there have been rumblings. Have a fundraising drive for them, you know?
I mean, do you believe it? They can't afford to pay for one studio space in the SNY building in New York City, the NFL, and they have to move a show that, you know, you have four hosts based in New York and they're just going to move it to LA. I mean, comical. What do you have any insight, any thoughts on an ESPN NFL network? I don't know. They buy it, they merge, whatever could happen. What's the Jim Miller insight?
I mean, look, I think we're looking at a time period now in ESPN's existence where so many things are up for grabs, right? So for most of their history since 1979, there may have been some different owners early on and whatever, but this is certainly the most dynamic time since 1996 when Disney took over Cap Cities and ESPN. I think there's equity plays, there's co-production plays, there's all sorts of different things. And of course, you have the big D2C move, ESPN straight to consumer next year coming, and that presents its own set of other options. Right. So the one thing that we know is that ESPN's relationship with the NFL is back on track after some difficult years. And I think that both Bob Iger and Jimmy Pitaro are anxious to explore whatever they can with the league.
Do you think it would be a merge or a purchase if something happened there?
Oh, I don't know. First of all, it isn't binary. There could just be an equity investment. There could be a lot of different financial levers that will be pulled that could have them be in business. Because remember, you also, if you're CBS and if you're NBC and Amazon, it's a tad askew, as Jerry would say, to kind of like be in bed with, you know, somebody that's really either owned or you're on one of their chief competitors. So
yeah,
I would look at some marginal activity there.
Right. And also, you know, you mentioned ESPN direct to consumer, which is supposed to happen next year. And I get my head spins trying to follow this stuff because there's going to be the ESPN direct to consumer. And then there's also this ESPN Fox Turner, who I don't even know who the third, this sports bundle thing.
Yeah, Turner. Yeah. Warner Brothers.
Right. Is there a conflict there? They're going to have both options for people. Is it just giving people more choices, like direct to consumer, and then you merge with those two companies for an app? What's the game plan there?
I think that when we, like a couple of years from now, if you and I were talking about the history of all this, we're going to say that in 2022, things got really, really disrupted. All the rules went out the window. In 23 and most of 24, a lot of things were thrown at the wall, and to see what stuck and to see what makes sense in an ever-changing financial and content universe. And then in 25, there's going to be a lot of consolidation, and there's going to be some real clarity, not only for the companies, but more importantly for the consumers, because this idea of us subscribing to 8 or 9 streaming channels, plus this, and we got that, and that's never going to be sustainable. So I think we're kind of like right before the inflection point where things start to get serious, and in terms of consolidation and clarity.
That's good to hear. It's good to hear, especially when that NBA deal comes out. You know, there's going to be at least one streaming service part of it. I wouldn't be, with all these deals now, I wouldn't be shocked if there's two streaming components. I'm not saying that's going to happen with the NBA. The NFL had that success with the Peacock playoff game, 23 million. I was fully expecting two playoff games on streaming next year, but it seems like it's only one. Amazon has the streaming playoff game next NFL season. Peacock will get the Brazil game with the Packers and Eagles. You know, it's like, where's Paramount? You would think they want some cut of the pie. That's because that seems like where everything's going. So,
well, Paramount's trying to figure out whether they're Paramount. Yeah. I mean, if you look at their market cap right now, I mean, that NFL deal is kind of wholly inconsistent with that. I think that they have to work it out, whether it's with David Ellison or not. But I'm not surprised that they're not jumping in right now to major, major expensive deals.
Do you think every single night when he goes to bed and the head hits the pillow, Tony Romo says, "Thank God I got my contract when I got it"?
No, I think he says, "I hope they can still pay it out." It's a long-term deal.
Yeah.
I hope there's enough money left.
Yeah. That would not be happening today, that's for sure.
No.
That's for sure.
Couldn't do it.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the Norby Williamson saga there at ESPN. So Norby, fair to say he was third in command behind Jimmy Pitaro and Burke Magnus.
On the content side? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Fair to say he was let go?
Yes.
Okay. I thought he was cooked. Now, I understand the narrative is this has nothing to do with McAfee. McAfee didn't get him fired, and I can believe that. It's about vision, which I want to get into. But when you have Pat McAfee on ESPN's air, calling him a rat, accusing him of leaking ratings, and then going on another podcast a couple of months later, doubling down, and there is complete silence from ESPN, I knew that guy was cooked. Because in the past world, that either would have gotten McAfee thrown off the air, or there definitely would have been a suspension or at least a public lashing. There was nothing. There was, I think there was some like frivolous, like, you know.
Well, remember something though. Hold on. One second. I don't mean to interrupt.
No, please do.
Here's, they can't suspend him because.
Right. They don't own the show. I mean,
he's not an employee.
Right.
People forget about that. So this was totally, totally a different kind of thing. This is not Tony Kornheiser trashing Hannah Storm or any of the great things from the Hall of Fame throughout the past 20 years. Right. So this guy is not an employee. So he's got huge margin for error. But I'm telling you, Jimmy, that if Pat McAfee had never mentioned Norby Williamson by name, Norby still would have been let go.
Okay. I can believe that. But my point is sort of, if you have someone on your air calling you a rat and accusing you of leaking ratings, and the company doesn't come out with any statement that says, you know, we don't appreciate these accusations, or, you know, we don't believe for a second that ratings were leaked or anything. There was nothing. So in my head, I don't know how he could have thought he was going to, I don't know how he ends up staying there when that happens.
I know, but I think that, look, I appreciate your perspective, but your perspective is from a guy who covers the place.
Right.
If you or I were inside, we don't need to comment about it. We don't need to make a statement about everything. Sometimes the best path from a strategic point of view inside the company is we're not going to say anything.
Right.
Like, you know, there's no obligation on the part of the company to comment on that. They obviously had some very intense meetings with everyone involved, not all together, but that's beside the point. They took care of it in their own way. And right. I think that's probably, you know, this was a smart move.
Do you have any insight into Norby's reaction to being let go? Is he disappointed? Is he hurt? Does he think, okay, I was there for 40 years. I don't mind moving on.
Well, forget about the 40 years. How about I got 2.5 years left on my contract. Pay me out.
Right.
I mean, right. Norby is like this. It's part of why he's been so effective. He was not going to be, you know, a drama queen given the circumstances. I think that he equipped himself very well. I thought the statement, the quote that he had in the press release was, I don't want to say elegant, but it was definitely the high road. And I think that Norby can drive off the campus knowing that he's made a huge contribution to the network. He has an entire army of people, both on air, like Chris Berman and Keith Olbermann and other stars from the past that really believe in him. And he's got a ton of loyalists who are still in jobs at ESPN who would carry any kind of water for him. They have to readjust their compasses now, but that's beside the point. You know, I mean, he's what, 60 years old. Put your feet up and count the money.
Also seems to have plenty of people who don't like him, though, on the flip side. You know, Rachel
Nichols. Without a doubt. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. You know, Norby is the ultimate. You can put me in front of a jury and I can do a closing statement to acquit or convict. Because there have been things that he's done that have been an incredible boon to ESPN. And there are things that he did that was a bane to their existence. And that's just, you know, that's part of why we're talking about him right now, because he was such a big blip on the radar screen.
I still, to this day, think Rachel Nichols got so screwed over. It wasn't even funny, but that sort of like got lost in all of the COVID madness and everything that was going on. But I don't know. You have a personal call recorded. I understand people don't like what she said, but I thought ESPN should have defended her more, but that's old news.
Yeah, I don't think Rachel's crying about Norby's departure.
Clearly. So the statement that everyone's giving is didn't fit the vision, didn't align the vision, ESPN's vision. Vision was the word. What is the vision exactly?
Well, I think vision can also be interchanged with playbook. look, for a second, for argument's sake, you're Burke Magnus, okay? You got this new job as head of all content production, and there are things that you got to do, particularly like find some ways to offset the hemorrhaging that's going on with linear eyeballs. So Pat McAfee is exhibit one, right? If you have one of your chief lieutenants, if not your top lieutenant, not in concert with that, I'm just using McAfee as an example.
Yeah.
How do you operate? I mean, right. You know, you want to come to work every single day knowing that the job is freaking hard enough. You got to have loyalty. You got to be operating on the same page. And I don't think any of the people, I mean, when Mark Shapiro's at ESPN, if somebody had been, you know, going upstream against what he wanted to do, that person wouldn't have lasted a nanosecond. It's just the reality of those jobs. And it's also important, I hate to use the word culture, but it's really important for the culture, because if you say something as the boss and then there's a shadow government going on and they're saying, well, you know what? Screw that. We're not going to do that. Or we don't want to do that. Or you're doing things to impede that progress. That's a really tough thing on employees.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's a part of me that thinks also, like, if you know Robbie Williamson, like, at some point, just get on board with the Pat McAfee thing. Like, why lose your job over it? Because, I keep saying this when it comes to the McAfee show. The McAfee show is not there for a television rating. It's a digital property, and it's what you said. ESPN and every other channel need to find ways to get people to consume their content that's not via linear. I'm not sure you can have a better piece of content than McAfee show. 3 hours filled with A-list guests Monday through Friday. If you Norby, like, get on board with it. But
right. But remember, we're just using Pat as exhibit A.
Right.
There were other instances and there were other things going on but before even Pat was hired.
Right, right. I do think too, you know, one of the things that I feel like gets lost in all this, because there's, you know, I think just ESPN's been around for so long. I think people sometimes maybe take it for granted. And then there's all the ridiculous backlash to nonsense with ESPN. And when it comes to doing the games and televising the games, they are still, to me, so head and shoulders above everyone else. Look at what I understand it was all about Caitlin Clark. They're not getting those ratings on another network. Like, the ESPN went all in, did everything they had to do, covered that women's tournament, covered Iowa in a way
it was on broadcast. Remember.
Right. But everything's, you know, we've talked about this, the shift back to broadcast. Look at the men's tournament. I think the men's tournament, you know, everyone was complaining about the 9:20 tip. Being on Turner is what hurts the men's tournament more than the 9:20 tip. No one thinks of Turner as a college basketball entity. They don't show one game during the regular season. They don't show one game in the conference tournaments. They swoop in for the NCAA tournament. People are not, they don't think of Turner as a college basketball property. And the rating on Turner was basically the same as last year on CBS. Last year they had San Diego State in the game, which was what hurt them last year from a rating standpoint. But if you're college basketball, you got to get that men's tournament on broadcast. I think with the shift back to broadcast, being on, if you're on cable, if you're on anything but ESPN, I think it hurts you. Look at baseball on FS1. Nobody watches any of those games on FS1. Even five. If you can get, you can be on ESPN, and you know, you get lucky, they simulcast on ABC. If they don't, you're still on ESPN. But if you're on any other cable entity, you've got to get to broadcast. It's just, the facts are out there with the numbers.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what Adam does with the NBA deal.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the finals are still on ABC, but they put but Turner's thought of as an NBA network. So I think it's different than the college tournament. I think I went into this a couple of weeks ago with Brian Curtis. You're as good as anyone to ask about this. You know, there's all these rumblings about Stephen A. wants $25 million. Will we ever see a day where a talent's going to get that salary from ESPN?
Well, I've learned to never say never. I mean, it is just, I'm sorry for the BS kind of answer, but
No, that's fine.
Who knows? I mean, look, you just referred to Pat's schedule during the week. Stephen A is in the tonnage business as well.
Yep.
And if you have like ESPN, 8,760 hours a year to program, if you have a guy who is tried and true and delivers, you know, good numbers and is also able to maneuver his way through the system, you know, with shoulder programming, different kind of sports beyond basketball, whatever, that's highly valuable. The interesting thing, though, is that it takes place when, I mean, there's this big paradox going on, right? Because all the companies are saying they're not making as much money as they used to. And yet at the same time, the rights deals keep going up. And when you saw Buck and Aikman's deal, and when you saw Tony, I mean, the talent deals still at the top tier are still getting those premium salaries. Right. What's happened is they've wiped out the middle class. You know, at like ESPN, for instance, a ton of anchors, sports center anchors and correspondents or whatever, people who made between 400,000 and let's say 1.5 a year. You know, a lot of them have been jettisoned. They were laid off. They weren't renewed. They were, or that ESPN said to them, we know you're making, you know, one, two, you'll make six next year. Take it or leave it. You know, but there's still a lot of room at the top. So yeah. I don't know what the number will be, but there's still money to be spent. Look, I think that there's going to probably be a big Peyton Manning deal at ESPN. For Omaha, and that's not going to be cheap. So, you know, there's money.
Is that you mean a deal with like an Omaha ESPN partnership?
Yep.
Not just a deal with Peyton, but with Omaha. Is it for the Manning cast and other stuff, or just for the Manning cast?
No, other stuff. I mean, Peyton and Jamie are like, they're cranking it out, man. Shows, podcasts, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that there is money to be found when they want it.
That'll be an interesting deal. See how much they give Peyton Omaha to continue with them. Because it's been a good partnership so far. So, you know, you'd think they'd be happy with it.
Well, the Manning cast, for sure. I mean, although I think the numbers were kind of off a little bit. But, yeah, it's just we'll see. I mean, look, the other thing is that if you're outsourcing so much content to a place like Omaha, it also gives you the freedom to lay off more people.
Well, that's not good. That we don't like to hear. But that's
no, I meant from a dollar and cents point of view.
Yeah, oh yeah. No, I understand. I understand. Anything on Norby before we move on to Curb that we should get in?
I don't know. I think, you know, the only thing I'd mention is typically we might be talking about, do you think he'll wind up at Fox or do you think he'll wind up with Turner? For me, at least, Norby is the quintessential Bristol employee. And I'd be surprised if he wound up someplace else. Maybe he'll consult or something, but, I don't see him at someplace else.
All right, let's switch over to Curb. Series finale was on Sunday night. Well, it was a 1 hour. And there's going to be spoilers, so if you haven't watched it, hit stop now. But we're going in depth on it, so spoilers are coming. You couldn't have had a better final 10 to 15 minutes. As soon as, or maybe it was even 20. From me, this is my opinion. From the second Jerry showed up on, it was as good as you could possibly get. That was my take on it. What was yours?
Well, you know what's really cool is that for over 20 years, and even you can see it in the ethos of Seinfeld, there's so many things that Larry David just doesn't give a shit about.
Right.
Right? Like, things that all of us would, like, obsess about or whatever. He doesn't care what this one says. He doesn't want to do this. He doesn't want to go there. The Seinfeld finale kind of, like, permeated his pores.
Yes.
He was very kind of indifferent to the criticism at the time. And then he got defensive for a while, and then he didn't want to talk about it for a while. But what I thought was really cool, and I haven't seen it discussed yet, but I'm not saying that I, you know, this is some great creation of mine, but the idea that he was a dog with a bone, and given the incredible carte blanche that he has to do anything he would want to do in the finale, he chose to address that Seinfeld finale in a way, and ultimately try and shove some toothpaste back into the proverbial tube. And that, like, I can't love Larry enough, but you gotta love it that he just wouldn't let that go.
Right. Absolutely. And there were little things throughout the season. I remember there was a scene with him and Ted Danson in maybe, I don't know, episode 4 or 5, where Ted brought up about this, the Seinfeld finale, and Larry, the look on Larry's face of disgust was great. You know what struck me too? It's funny, when it was over and I just was processing it and thinking about it and the brilliance of it, it is amazing. Larry left Seinfeld for the last, whatever it was, 3 years, 3 seasons, came back, did the finale. And Larry gets all the shit for the finale. And Jerry gets none of it, I feel like. Like, it's all on Larry. The show was called Seinfeld. It was Jerry's Seinfeld show. I feel like if you're someone who didn't like the finale, and I actually liked the Seinfeld finale, but it is funny that Larry gets 100% of this shit for it and Jerry gets zero.
Well, I think we as a society decided a long time ago that we're going to coat Jerry Seinfeld in layers and layers and layers of Teflon.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's just, you know, we just like him too much.
Did you have, if I asked you for like a favorite moment in the finale, anything that like hit you a certain way? Because I have one. I would love to hear it if you have one. And I'll give you mine.
I... I actually thought that as soon as Susie raised the light would come in, you know, on the plane. Thought that's just, it's so quintessentially Curb, because it's a meaningless gesture,
right? That,
like, we got through, you know, Jerry and Larry walking out of the jail and, oh, we should have ended the Seinfeld thing, the fucking alley that way. And then, okay, do you fade out then? A lot of people would fade out, right? You know, David Chase would cut the black. But but I think that we're sitting there in the plane and I'm thinking, okay, what's this scene going to be about? And as soon as she raised it and the sun is in Larry's, I thought, okay, there you go.
Yep.
It's just like a tiny little meaningless thing that turns into like a bitch fest for everybody and that showcases all their, you know, all their craziness.
That was great. It was a great way to end it. It was very quick. It was maybe 10 seconds. It was in the courtroom when the jury, the bailiff gives the verdict to the judge. And then it has to go back to the jury. And Larry and Jerry just had, it was like
so
the
great.
Peak Larry Jerry moment about like what you know. Oh, and then just, Jerry goes, oh yes, he has to see it. Then he says, what are we doing? What did they
just make two copies?
Right. That right there, I probably laughed as hard as that than at any moment in the finale, because that right there was the perfect summation. And I have to say, Leon asking Jerry where are the fuck tapes. I mean, that was perfectly
Laserdisc.
Yeah, I'll sell it to Netflix. That was perfect, Leon.
Yeah.
But if I give you the thing that made me laugh the hardest was Jerry and Larry with the bailiff and the verdict and the complaining about that was just so good.
It was perfect. They were more interested in that than they were what the verdict was.
Yes. Right. Well, then the follow-up to that was Larry and Susie and Jerry discussing where Larry would work in jail.
Right.
Susie says, you should work in the infirmary. And Jerry goes, you can greet people. Hello, jail. I mean, that was so good. So good.
I mean, look, I've always been glad that Curb has come back. And I think that there are a lot of people say, oh, it hasn't been that good. as good recently or whatever. I don't feel the need to make a qualitative analysis of that. But I think what I'm going to miss about Curb is something that's like fundamental to Larry's character, which is in this world where we live, where like what we can say to each other and out in the world has been going, like when we were growing up, it's like this, and then it gets like this, and it gets like this, then it gets like this, this. When some idiot goes and parks, you know, outside the lines, thinks of like, and, right. and you know, none of us would say anything, but Larry's like, what, you go back and straighten out your car. You're over the line. No, you know, he constantly throughout all the seasons were saying things that we wish we could say and wish, you know, we were allowed to say, or that we had the guts to say. And that kind of, I mean, I don't want to say, well, it is gumption. It's audacity, it's gumption, and it's hilarious. Like, I think that is, you know, part of the DNA of Curb that I'm going to really miss. Of course, the laughs and the characters and stuff like that. But, yes. but that was really special.
Yes, absolutely. That was, to me, that's what made the show, was when you saw the stuff he covered that you thought in your head in real life scenarios, like you mentioned with the guy who parks outside the lines, like that. That to me is why it was the greatest show. And he hit on so many of those over the years. And we also got a wonderful sports reference in the finale when he was talking to Richard Lewis's girlfriend. Oh God, I forgot the actress's name. She's like, tremendous actress. Well, I can't remember her name now. From Mom and, oh my God, her name's out of my head.
Yeah, just blanking.
Allison Janney, thank you. Shelby,
oh,
my
of course.
Producer. Yes, right. I can't, yeah. Law and Order, right. Allison Janney, thank you. Shelby, my producer, gave me that. And she says, you know, have you ever experienced a great loss in your life? And he said the 2004 Yankees lost 4 in a row to the Red Sox. Perfect sports reference for the finale.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, she was very good. She's.
Did you happen to see, I'm sorry, did you want to?
No.
Go ahead. All right. Did you see the day, I think it was on either Monday or Tuesday, I believe it was Monday, actually, the day after, on the Max, we should do a whole podcast on why it's called Max, but that's a whole other, on the Max YouTube page, they released a 3-minute clip of behind the scenes footage from filming the last scene on the airplane.
Don't get me started, dude, because, I mean, for those who didn't see it, you know, Richard stands up and, yep. I mean, he's obviously weak, but he said, you know, this is the greatest part of his career and how much he loved Larry, and Larry treated him like a god. And then Cheryl said what she said, and, you know, I love you. And she said to Larry, you changed my entire life. And there is the best shot. I mean, for people who didn't see it, they should go see it, because
yep.
Larry is actually, God forbid, vulnerable in this moment. He is taken by the emotion, and he doesn't say anything, and he just, like, literally just walks away.
Yep.
It was so,
couldn't handle it.
It was so perfect. It's you know, it was incredibly poignant.
Have you heard anything? I don't know if you can, if you text him, email him, or through back channels. Have you heard it? Is he satisfied with the finale or reaction to the finale? Have you gotten any word about that?
Oh yeah. I mean, I didn't text them about it, but I think, I think they were all pleased.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you haven't seen that YouTube on Max, you have to watch it. The Richard Lewis, it was, you know,
remember something, there was like a 6-year gap in between some of the seasons. This was a big deal, because if you could go back to some of the season finales, you could say, oh, well, you know what? That probably seems like a series finale. Yet then all of a sudden he decided to come back. And I would talk, when I talked to Susie, or when I talked, like, they would say, we don't know, we don't know, we don't know. So the idea that he announced in advance that they knew, you know, we knew that this was coming, that's a pretty big matzo ball.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really could not have been a better finale, I thought. Like I said, those last 20 minutes, with the verdict and the wrapping it up, just perfect. Perfect. I will never see another show like it again. That's for sure.
That is for sure.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming on and giving us some information here. My pleasure. There was nobody better to have on this week. And we will have you on again, of course, for your periodic visits down the road. And be well. Jim Miller, again, books on ESPN, books on HBO, books on Saturday Night Live. We don't discuss SNL enough, but to me, that was your best. That was the one I think I enjoyed the most because there was so much stuff in there I didn't know because I was younger at that time. But anyone who has not read that SNL book, I cannot recommend it enough. That book, I was riveted to that one more than the, I mean, I love them all, the HBO one, but the SNL one was, I have to say, my favorite, if I may.
Thank you so much. That means a lot.
It was great. All right. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. All right. Joining me now from Barstool Sports is 4Play Podcast, old coworker, dear friend, Dan Rappaport. Danny, what's going on?
Dear friend is right. You didn't come to my wedding, which I'm still a little salty about.
But I don't blame you.
We're still dear friends. You're a big... You know, I've discovered that I call most people that I you know live in New York that I don't see anymore during dog when I walk my dog. And you're like firmly in the rotation of the dog walk calls.
I love that.
Yeah,
I should be. If you got married in New York, I would have been there. But I'm
Chicago,
a big baby.
Wasn't that far away.
I haven't been on an airplane in a long time.
I thought you were going to Vegas soon in an airplane.
Well, there's negotiations about that. I told my friends like. Someone's got to be there to hold my hand on the plane. I'm not flying by myself.
It's called Xanax.
I got those ready to go, believe me.
Yeah, I don't doubt
it. We'll see what happens. But you are in Augusta for the Masters.
I'm in Augusta, number 6.
Is this the greatest weekend of your life every year?
No. I mean, it's fun. It's stressful because it's like our Super Bowl, you know, it's the one year where people like you are paying attention. So there's definitely a little bit of, you know, you just got to deliver and, you know, we've had live events and we've got a lot of sponsors and, you know, trying to make sure everyone's happy. So it's definitely a stressful week. You know, I think your first couple times coming here is, you know, you're very wide eyed and I still very much appreciate coming here and I enjoy the week, but it's you know, no matter what your job is, no matter how cool your job is, at a certain point, it becomes your job. And so, you know, it's a work week. It's an important work week, but it's a work week.
It's a big betting week, too.
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Tiger?
Not me. So they're asking for Sal Johnson. You don't want to hear your name over that loudspeaker. That's not good if that happens.
Oh, really? It means you're in trouble?
It's just, you know, this is a week where you just...
Lay low.
The less times that your name gets called, the better, you know?
Yeah. All right. So we're going to do a lot of Masters stuff and betting stuff. Before I get into any of that, just for someone, like you said, like I'm not like day in, day out paying attention to golf. Where do we stand like with this Live PGA thing? Like I thought, I'm going to talk over her.
Sal Johnson.
Oh, Sal Johnson's in trouble.
Yeah.
But like, so they were supposed to merge, but they haven't merged. Are they still supposed to merge is basically my question.
The official word from both sides is they are working toward an agreement, but you're right. It's been almost 10 months. No, actually it's been over 10 months since it was June 6th. I always say January 6th by accident because it's both J6, but they're both very crazy days in my life. So it was June 6th of last year. You know, they appear on CNBC, Jay Monahan, the commissioner of the PGA Tour and Yasser Al-Rumayyan, the head of the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund, and you know, talking about bringing the game of golf together. You fast forward 10 months and change, and it hasn't happened. The PGA Tour took on an investment about 2 months ago that could be up to $3 billion from American sports owners. It's this group called Strategic Sports Group. It's led by Fenway Sports Group, which owns the Red Sox and the Penguins and Liverpool, and there's other guys like Arthur Blank, who owns the Falcons. Steve Cohen is a big investor, owns the Mets. So it's a bunch of American billionaires who invested. And so they're a little bit less cash strapped now than they were when they made that agreement. So I think there's a little bit of, I definitely wouldn't say that they're operating from a position of strength, but it's less weak than it was before they got the money. But as of right now, you know, nothing, the Live guys are still playing on Live. They're still banned from playing in the PGA Tour. The majors are the only four events where where everyone plays, all the top players in the world. And, you know, until that happens, until a deal is made, you know, it seems like it's starting to have a negative impact on the PGA Tour in the sense of ratings are down this year. And that could be a number of things, but I think fans are a little bit tired of all the talk about money and division. And I think people expected this to be over quite a while ago.
And no one watches Live, right? Like on the CW, like
barely. No, I mean, not a fraction of the amount that watch the PGA Tour. So it's not like, it's not like, okay, the PGA Tour is losing, you know, all its viewers to Live. I think it's more that people are just not watching golf. Right. It'll be interesting to see what the number is, the ratings are this week, because
if it's gonna be that splintered, both are gonna be hurt,
right? And but in a way, it might actually help the majors a little bit, because if you're the only four tournaments where best players are playing, where you know Brooks is playing against Scotty and you know Rahm is playing against Rory, then people are gonna tune into those.
Right now, is it now because these guys don't? They only play against each other now in the majors. So for something like the Masters, are these guys, like when the Live guys join the PGA guys for the Masters, are they all like catching up and it's a kumbaya and we can't wait to hang out? Or is there like still rivalry stuff?
It was a little bit testy last year when everyone came together. But, you know, I think after, because it was before they made that agreement on June 6th, not January 6th, it was side versus side. And, you know, the narrative from the PGA Tour is these are bad people. These Saudis, you know, we're never going to do a deal with them. We want you to stay loyal to our tour. And, you know, these guys who left turned their backs on you and they've damaged our tour. It's a little harder to make that argument after you appear on CNBC with the head of the Saudi PIF. So I think once that happened, and John Rahm said this, you know, he went to Live in December. Man. He said everything changed on that day because it shined a light on the hypocrisy, really. And I think anybody who felt an allegiance to the PGA Tour probably doesn't feel as strongly now as they did when they were fighting the good fight, so to speak. So I think everyone's happy. And I think, like, I think the players don't hold it against the other players for taking the bag, basically.
Right.
Everyone's, you know, everyone's experiences make them a different person, and everyone values different things. And Bryson DeChambeau said this week that, you know, he thinks his mom would have slapped him if he didn't take the deal. It was $125 million and whatever it was. And so those guys are looking pretty smart.
Yep. All right. That's a good catch up. Let's go to the Masters and a lot of the betting stuff I want to get into. Now, you ranked for Barstool, you ranked the top 89 players in order.
Started doing it at Sports Illustrated, actually.
Yep. And I know you had Scottie Scheffler as number one. Scottie Scheffler on DraftKings plus 400, lowest odds to win the, you know, he's minus 500 to finish top 20, minus 200 top 10. And now I see his wife is supposed to have a baby at any day.
Yeah, I don't know if it's any day. I think she's due in like a week and a half. And I feel like, you know, he's rich. Like they can sort of choose when that happens, can't they?
If she goes into labor on Saturday, what is he going to do?
He said he's going to leave.
Really? So yeah, I mean, is it buyer beware if you bet on Scottie Scheffler?
I guess it's like something to know, but I have a hard time envisioning that scenario. It's funny because he said it, and then he's best friends with this guy, Sam Burns. They like travel together. They stay in the same houses a lot. Sam Burns' wife is due like the same time, which that's a separate conversation. I don't know how that happens. And Sam Burns is like saying the same thing. Like, I leave. It's like, Sam Burns, your best finish in a major is tied for 20th. If you're leading the Masters on Saturday, you better not leave, because your kid's going to get to 12 years old. And if you tell him that you left when you were leading the Masters, he's going to be like, whoa, are you stupid? Why did you do that?
I'm just thinking about it from the most important angle. Like, if you have Scottie Scheffler plus 400 and he's up like, you know, five strokes on Saturday, and then he has to leave because his wife's having a baby, DraftKings, I need DraftKings to, you know, that's a refund situation.
I think golf is kind of the only sport where that could happen, right? I mean, everything else is like a 2-hour game, 3-hour game. Golf is, you know, you got to get through 4 days. So I guess it's possible.
He is plus 105 to finish in the top five.
Mm-hmm. That's wild. That's wild.
I mean, is there any way he doesn't finish in the top five here outside of his wife having the kid?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. It could be like a, it could be a super crowded leaderboard, you know, and he could finish three shots back, but it, you know, that might be tied for eighth. I mean, it's definitely possible. He's, you know, he's done it before, and you know, it's not like he's won every single tournament that he's played in, but recently he's gone victory, victory, and then lost by one. And obviously he's played well here. He finished, he won the tournament 2 years ago, and I think he finished in the top 10 last year. So it's definitely, he's the biggest favorite. Yeah, he finished T10 last year. So like, it's possible. He's the biggest favorite in the tournament since Tiger in 2013. So
that's saying something right there.
It's definitely saying something. He's clear number one player in the world. He's had an unbelievable start to the year, and you know, he hits the ball so well consistently week to week. It basically just comes down to how he putts. So if he putts well, he's probably going to win the tournament.
All right. Tiger is -115 to make the cut.
Yeah.
I mean, from what I know, he's barely played
one round this year.
Right. So I thought he would have been plus to make the cut, but I don't know anything about golf. So
the reason is because I believe the cut is top 50 in ties, and there's only 89 players in the field.
Got it.
So in a normal tournament, if it's plus 60 in ties, like at the US Open, it'll probably be plus 60 in ties, but there's 144 guys who are playing. And then also at the Masters, you've got, you know, six or seven past champions who are 50 and above and don't ever play. So that brings it down to like 80, 82. And then you've got, you know, four amateurs. So you really got to, I mean, I can't remember who it was who was telling me this, but I think it was Matt Fitzpatrick was like, you got to really suck to miss the cut at the Masters. Like, it's kind of hard to do. And Tiger's also made 24 cuts in a row as a pro, which is the record. And he's tied for the record. And if he makes the cut this week, he'll set the record for 25 years in a row. I think he's going to make the cut.
So if he doesn't make the cut,
it's a disaster.
The sports media on Twitter is going to be crying like the biggest bunch of babies in the world. My God.
Yeah.
I got my angle here.
You're going to take him to miss it?
Well, no, I'll take him to make it and then root for him to miss it. Okay. So I could see everyone have like the full blown meltdown on Twitter.
If he misses the cut this week and if he, you know, looks bad doing it.
Yeah.
There will be some people who are writing some columns about, you know, is he done? Should he hang it up? Because he's, you know, he said in December that he wanted to play.
Why do you have to hang it up in golf? Like, it's not like the NFL where, like, if you're out there embarrassing yourself, like, you can get killed. Like, okay, so if he's not great at, like, if he's injured, like, yeah, you don't want to see him limping around. But, like, if he's just...
Well, he's injured.
Right. Well, then he shouldn't be playing. If you're injured, don't play. If you play, then all bets are off. You can get criticized.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't a scenario in which he would retire because like he's in good condition, but just stinks at golf. Like his body simply will not let him play. I mean, he said in December that he wanted to play once a month. So by that logic, he would have played four full tournaments. By now, or at least three full tournaments, and he played one round in LA in February with Drew, and has not played since.
Yeah, I remember that.
He said his body just wouldn't let him play, just didn't happen.
But you still think he's going to make the cut?
I do think he's going to make the cut. Yeah, I think he's just like so prideful. I think this is a record that matters to him, 25 in a row, and I think he'll just be looking at Friday afternoon in any way. I mean, and he's, you know, he knows this is a great golf course for him. It requires a lot of local knowledge, it requires a lot of experience, and he knows how to play it obviously better than anyone else. So he's never missed the cut as a pro. I don't expect it to happen this week.
Oh my god,
I don't think he has any chance of winning the tournament, any chance, right. Zero chance, but I think he'll make the cut.
Twitter on Friday, if he doesn't make the cut, I can't wait. They will be crying like there's no tomorrow. I know the weather's supposed to be bad on the first day on Thursday. How does that affect, like, who does that help anyone? Who does that hurt the most individually?
It probably hurts Tiger the most because a wet golf course is harder to walk. And if they can't play on Thursday, then they're going to like try to play, you know, more than one round in a day.
Right.
And that's really, really difficult for Tiger. It just sort of depends. I mean, I suspect they won't play at all tomorrow. So I think they'll basically, everyone will be kind of in the same boat of trying to play 72 holes over 3 days instead of four. And then they will. They have enough room in the schedule, and the weather's supposed to be good on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But I think, yeah, just any of the older guys, you know, I think it's not good for them to have a wet golf course and have to play a lot of holes in one day.
All right, let me ask you some of these guys. So Scheffler's the favorite, plus 400. You got Rory, plus 1,000. John Rahm, plus 1,100. Schauffele, plus 1,400. Koepka, plus 1,600. Those guys Schauffele. There. Schauffele, yeah, those
I
guys
like
there.
Schauffele.
Yeah. That's
yeah,
the
I don't
value.
Think Rory,
that's
I think,
the va- that's the value
I
guy.
Think so. I think Rory's, you know, he's always listed near the top because he's a huge name. It's a little bit of like the Tiger situation where his, you know, you're not going to get fair odds because a lot of people are betting on him because a lot of people like him. You know, this is the only major he hasn't won. There's a ton, you know, he'll feel the weight of the world on his shoulders, I think, if he's up there. Just don't love what I've seen from him so far this year. Whereas Xander's been in it, like he's been basically had a chance to win every tournament he's played this year. So I like his chances. I like 14-1. What is it? What's Matsuyama at? He's plus two.
He was, 2000. He's like in that range. Cause it was, I cut it off at 1600. So.
Yeah, he's playing great also. He's playing unbelievable. He's won here in 2021. But it's funny, like a lot of the big names are not really playing that well. Like Jordan Spieth not playing well, Justin Thomas not playing well, Victor Hovland not playing well. It's really the best players on tour this year have been Scottie Scheffler, Wyndham Clark, and Xander Schauffele, who are, you know, big names, but not kind of the Ricky Fowlers and the Rorys, you know, the guys of kind of 5 years ago.
Wyndham Clark is plus 4,000.
Yeah, it's so the one thing to know about him is it's his first time playing in the Masters, and nobody has won their first Masters appearance since 1979. So,
give me, outside of betting a winner, what's a prop? If someone's looking to just like have a little fun and make a little bit of money, not, you know, get rich off of it, but like, what's a good prop? What do you think's like a good, like, is it a make the cut? Is it a top? Like, where would you dabble if you're someone like me?
I would dabble a little bit on top 10 bets or top 20 top bets. So I love Shane Lowry to finish in the top 10 this week. He's a guy who's probably more in like the 50-1 range, who's just been hitting the ball great and has played here really, really well. Top 25s the last 4 years, I think. And Cameron Smith is another guy who I think is under, I think the LIV guys are a little bit undervalued because people don't watch them. They're just kind of out of sight, out of mind. So Brooks, you know, Cameron Smith, John Rahm, like I think those guys, I think they're going to have a strong show. I mean, last year, the first place was John Rahm, LIV. Second place, Phil Mickelson, Brooks Koepka, LIV. Fourth place, Patrick Reed, LIV. So like, just because these guys went to LIV doesn't mean that they're not basically the same golfers they were before. And that was a narrative going into last year. How are they going to play? You know, are they prepared enough? Do they not care? And then after two rounds, it's like, turns out the reason that they got $100 million to go to LIV is because they're pretty fucking good at golf.
Right,
you know?
Right. Absolutely. If you're someone who's listening to this podcast like Saturday morning, two rounds are in, or you know, if they play Thursday, if they don't play, and you want to then jump into the betting fray for like Saturday and Sunday, you're late to it. Is there something there that you look into? Like what could someone jump in? You can still bet the winner based on what the odds are, but like what would be a strategy for that person?
I think matchups are super fun, especially on the weekend. Like, so they play threesomes, three guys playing at a time on Thursday, Friday, and then they switch to twosomes on Saturday and Sunday. And so you get one guy against another guy. And those are just battles. Those are like, when you bet those, it's 4 hours of like every hole feels like a mini title fight. I'm a big fan of the head to heads. You see when they come out, you know, and they're usually pretty close. They're usually, you know, one guy's minus 130, one guy's plus 110 or whatever it is. So it's kind of a coin flip, but it's just really, really fun to like lock in on those two guys and their rounds. Doesn't matter where they are. They could be, you know, first guys off in the morning and they're way back, or it could be the final group. And you can always take, they always have matchups. So I'm a big matchup fan.
Got it. And then also, if you're someone, if you don't want to just do like a straight up bet on like who's going to win it or top 10, and you want to do something with your buddies, like a pool or a draft or something, you have any recommendations? Like what could be, is there a fun, just like pick four golfers each, whoever, like, is there a fun pool or something like that to do? What do you?
Yeah, there's a bunch of different like formats. If you go to
give me a format you love that you think people.
So I'm in a pool where it's like, you basically get to pick one golfer from each tier. and they tier the golfers usually like based on their odds. And you know, you could pick Scottie Scheffler, but you got to think, okay, you know, everyone's going to pick Scottie Scheffler. And so you want to kind of zag when people zig so that you differentiate yourself. And then there's also just, you know, my brother and I typically do like, he goes first, I go next to, he goes next to, I go next to, and then you just, you know, total up the score at the end. There's a million different ways to do it, but this is definitely the week to jump in.
Does every person in your life contact you this week and say who's going to win so I can bet it?
Yeah, I get a few, but you know, I wrote that piece where I rank all the guys, so I just send them a link to that. I'm like, just I spent way too much time on this. Like,
you just go read
it. Well, what am I? I mean, maybe we're going to say Scotty, like, and then they're like, oh, great, he's the favorite. It's like, oh, you asked the question.
I have to say, so when a lot of the Sports Illustrated turmoil was happening, and people, you know, my phone blew up with people asking what's going on, I would just send them like a link to the story.
So it's the same
thing. And I felt like a dick, but listen, if you had like two or three people hitting you up and you sent them the link, I'd be like, okay, come on, Danny, let's be a little, but if you got like tons of people hitting you up, then yes, you can send the link.
Well, if it's one of my friends, like one of my good pals, then I'll talk to them. But like, you know, people come out of the woodwork and they're like, hey dude, I'm filling out this pool. And so then I just send them the link.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Is there a long shot? Like, I know you said Shoffley, but he's 1400, but is there some crazy long shot worth a $5 flyer?
I'm going to say Shane Lowry again. You know, he's my guy this week. He's my outsider that I'm hooked on a feeling. He's my guy.
Are you high on believing?
I'm high on believing, hooked on a feeling.
All right. So there we go. I love it. What else? Tiger. Oh my God. I'm all about Tiger now with the cut. That's what I'm going to be locked in on.
I can't believe you're going to bet on him to make it and then hope he misses it. Why wouldn't you just bet on him to miss it then?
Because if he misses the cut, if I bet on him to miss it, no, because if I bet on him to miss it and then he makes it, I get nothing out of that.
So you're just, you like emotional.
I want the Twitter.
Do you bet against your team every time?
I want the Twitter. Oh, if the Yankees were playing in Game 7 of World Series, I would bet against them.
Just absolutely. Emotional hedge.
No, so you end up winning something.
Okay, but you also limit your upside.
Yes, I will limit the upside to win something.
I feel like that's a like kind of a psychological case study. Yeah. You know,
it's like a reverse jinx type of thing.
Yeah.
Like if the Yankees are in Game 7 of the World Series, I want them to win, so I'll bet a little amount on them to lose. So if they lose, the pain of is a little. But see, like what I want more than anything now is for Tiger to miss the cut. Not because the Twitter meltdown with the people on Twitter with the Tiger. Oh my God, they'll be devastated, and that's what I need. I need people in pain.
You're Schadenfreude. You're exactly. You're happy. That's about what it. Yankees are on a good like. Start, aren't they?
On fire. I mean, they're playing shitty teams, but listen, you can only beat who you play. So I don't want to take anything away from them, but yeah, Soto, Judge, they should be Volpe. They should roll, you know, through the regular season at least in the playoffs. And anything can happen.
He's good now. He didn't he have like a so-so first year?
Well, he was a rookie. He was. I think he was a little better than so-so. He wasn't great, but he was solid. But he was a rookie.
And this year he's balling.
Yes, so far so good for Volpe.
New York must be alive.
The Yankees are. They're getting there. They're getting there. The Knicks are, you know, the Knicks are good for a change, so that's good. What do you like the week, like next weekend, the weekend after the Masters? Is there a tournament? Like, do you go cover that?
No, I'm playing in a golf tournament myself with a buddy. So it's that's probably the best, honestly, is the week after the Masters because
you play at Augusta, right?
No. Well, there's a lottery that I've entered every year. I've not won it yet, so we'll see.
Oh, really?
I'm 0-5. We'll see about year 6.
Are you when you get the no? Are you devastated?
Yeah, especially because last year two of my best buddies who I used to work with at Golf Digest they both won it, so they got to play together, which is like as good as it gets. Because that's one thing. It's like you win the media lottery and you're playing Augusta, but you might be playing with like some random people that you've never met before, and it's kind of awkward. Right. They got to play with and they're like best pals, so I was definitely jealous of that.
A lot of FOMO.
But no, I mean the week after is the best. I'm playing in a member guest with my buddies coming in from New York. We're gonna get after it, a lot of tequila, and just have fun out on the golf. It's a big decompress week.
All right. And then when's the next tournament you cover after the Masters?
It's a good question. I mean, my job is a little bit less like going to tournaments now and staying for the whole week. Like I go to a lot on Tuesday, Wednesday before the tournament actually starts. So I can kind of talk to people and do some interviews. And once the tournament starts, you know, these guys are very much on autopilot. Like you just, they don't want to talk to you after the round, you know, like that's, and so it's better to go before when everyone's loose and everyone's happy and I can kind of walk with them during their practice round. Once the tournament starts, there's not much. So I'll probably go to another one early May, for a couple of days in Charlotte. And then I'll go to the PGA Championship in mid May in Kentucky, probably for the whole week.
Are there any golfers who hate you?
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. Wait,
really?
Yeah.
Like for you, if you want to tell me who, but if you don't, like, for what reason?
I don't think Brooks Koepka is a huge fan of mine. I'm not really sure why.
But isn't he a huge Barstool guy?
He's a big Pardon My Take guy. But he has some complicated history with our podcast because he was supposed to play Portnoy in a match that he was going to play lefty and try to beat Portnoy. And then they had already like rented out the golf course and gotten all these sponsors involved, and like a couple days before he pulled out, and then he played Bryson DeChambeau like not long after that. So Portnoy was like very anti Brooks, and I think that some of the live guys probably hold grudges against us because we might have made them out to be bad guys in the heat of the moment. So right. I think it's funny to me when someone hates me. It's like it's crazy that little me can occupy that kind of space in someone's head. I'm just making videos about golf. It's really not that complicated. But
yeah, but Barstool's a big deal, and that people see it and they pay attention to it. So if you say something negative, it's gonna,
right. I'm sure some people didn't like me on the Netflix show or something. That's possible. So who knows?
Why wouldn't they like you on the Netflix show? That seemed like a harmless thing.
It was kind of harmless, I thought.
Yeah.
I don't think most of them hate me. I know it's not like I'm walking around and I can't show my face, but there's obviously a few guys who, for whatever reason, but some people just don't want to be happy in general. You know, some people just hate people, and that's kind of their That's kind of their baseline.
Like me rooting for Tiger to miss the cut.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's Tiger ever done to you?
Him, nothing. The media, it's too much.
You're
it's
over
a
it. Much.
Yeah. Still want to know how he almost, got killed, but no one seems to care with his car accident. But that's all right.
No charges.
Media just was like, oh yeah, let's no charges. Forget about that. It's Tiger. No one cares. Let's
Sheriff's
about
office
it.
Cleared him.
Exactly. I love the backstory on that one.
Sheriff's office cleared him.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. So Schauffele, Shane Lowry, those are the names.
Those
bets
are
matchups on Saturday and Sunday.
Hole in one bet's fun too. Take a hole in one. I think there's a hole in one prop. It's about even money.
How often is there a hole in one at the Masters?
A lot.
On really?
16, yeah, on 16 on Sunday, they put the pin kind of at the bottom of a hill. And so there's usually like balls that are rolling toward it.
But like in the last 10 Masters, how many hole in ones have there been?
Probably half, I would guess.
Really?
I'm going to look it up.
Oh, that's good to know. That's an interesting. I would assume, too, the money there is. Mm-hmm. Is the odds there are pretty good. Hole in one.
I think it's like even money.
That's too random for me though. Like I don't
yeah.
Know.
Yeah. You're not really like watching. That's like someone who's going to be watching all week, you know? And anytime it comes, then they're happy. But
when you watch, when you're at the Masters, but do you watch the television coverage? Like, do you listen to Nance?
Yeah. On Sunday, I'll watch the coverage a little bit. I mean, I try to go out there and watch with my eyes cause you're here, right. But they do such an incredible job, by far the best of all the majors, of like giving all these different streams. So what I would do is like go look at if you want to watch the guys that you bet on, you can go look at the featured groups and bet a matchup within there, or bet on one of those guys, because then you can watch every single shot of those guys. And they also, in the app, it's like not only do they allow you to track the guys, but they upload videos of the shots, not quite in real time, but like a minute later. So if you want to see like, okay, where did he hit it on this hole? You can actually watch it on the app for pretty much every guy. It's kind of amazing.
If I want to see how I lost my bet, I can torture myself.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to watch it on TV because I want to hear Vern Lundquist last event.
Yeah, 40 and done.
That's a legend right there. So I definitely want to pay respects and listen to him do his last event ever. Because
hopefully
everybody loves Uncle
Hopefully
Vern.
Tiger's there on the weekend, and you know they can give us one more hurrah.
If he is, I'll win some money. So yeah, that'll be good. See, there it is. There's the hedge. All right.
Either way, you win.
My good buddy Dan Rappaport from 4Play Podcast on Barstool Sports. Enjoy Augusta. Stay out of trouble. Talk to you soon.
See you, man.
All right. All right. It feels good to say this again. Joining me now for our weekly Train of Thought segment, even though we haven't had it in a few weeks, from WFAN Radio in New York, SNY TV in New York, my buddy Sal Licata. Sal,
we are back. It is, first of all, congratulations. I'm excited for you and happy with everything that's going on here. Now, I will say it doesn't feel like it's been that long. Has it been
because we did your podcast 2 weeks ago, or was that last week? 2 weeks ago.
So last week we did nothing.
Right.
Then we did my podcast 2 weeks ago.
Right. Right.
And before that, didn't we do it? So we only missed really one week.
So no. So there was a week where I didn't do a pod, I think. Then we did your podcast the week after. And then last week I was back, but we weren't really set up for this segment. And now, so we've done one, we haven't done a Train of Thoughts on the SI Media podcast in 3 weeks, but we did a Train of Thoughts on your podcast 2 weeks ago.
So that's why it feels, that's what it feels
right. And I have had so many people ask me about what's going on with Sal's move, but we'll save that for the end. That was when I announced 3 weeks ago I couldn't do a pod. That was like, you know, there's a lot of, you know, we got to find out if Sal's all moved in. So we'll get to that.
Oh, right. I forgot it aligned with me moving in. Okay, we'll get to that.
Right. So what I like about this pod is you and I really have not spoken in several days. I looked, my last text to you is about a former coworker who you may know, but other than that, we haven't gotten into anything.
What do you bring else to the table?
Right. So we have we're going to go into this fresh. So let me start with this. Did you watch WrestleMania?
I did not.
Neither night.
I know about it. I know what happened. I saw some of the highlights. I wanted to do it, and then I just got caught up, and I was like, it's not worth it, because I didn't have Peacock, so whatever.
So you don't have Peacock?
Correct.
What did you do for the playoff game in the NFL?
I had it then. I got rid of it after the playoff game.
Got it. Now, what about, you know, that the Friday night, first weekend Brazil game, Packers-Eagles, is going to be on Peacock?
Yeah, I mean, come on. So somebody told me that before. Set me straight here on this. There's a Thursday night opener. Right?
Correct.
And
that'll be the
that
Chiefs. That'll be probably in Kansas City.
Well, holy shit. I mean, remarkable that a game actually to open the season will be played in a stadium that we actually watch regularly here in the U.S. And then there's a Friday night game right after that.
Well, so the way that it works is Friday comes after Thursday.
Right, but that it's that week, that opening week.
Exactly. Yeah. Week one.
Too much.
Friday night from Brazil. Eagles, and Packers.
Right.
On Peacock. Peacock exclusive.
Right. I don't even get bothered by the Peacock part of that, but I will not order Peacock for that. And I'm bothered that it's right out of the gate Thursday, Friday. Like, come on, spare me.
All right. I got that out of the way. Now let me get back to the WrestleMania. Did you watch highlights on Twitter? Did you skip them?
I saw highlights of the second night main event on. I might have read it on your column. Did you have it somewhere? I read it somewhere. I thought that had like the multiple layers to it. So
yeah. So I have to say, the way they paid everything off was like they could not have done a better job with the payoff of Cody Rhodes finally finishing the story against Roman Reigns.
Can I tell you my problem with it? And we discussed this before.
Yeah.
Once everybody started bitching, the Cody crybabies or whatever.
Yes, which I'm one of.
And they changed the plan. This is months ago.
Right.
I already knew that Cody was going to win. So for me, it took away the suspense. I didn't know how it was going to happen, but I didn't really care as much because I knew he was going to win. Didn't that take away?
No, because you wanted his, for two reasons. One, I don't know why, but like the day or two before, I started like thinking, like, could you imagine if they make Roman win? Like, from a business perspective, like the insanity that that would be.
They should have done that.
Can you pull the trigger on that? But also, it wasn't about. It was about how was they going to get there? How were they going to get there with him pinning Roman Reigns? And the way they ended up getting there, like, you knew the Usos would do the run in, which was great. They did a spear off the stage, which was cool. But then to have Cena, then The Rock, then The Undertaker, it was
right. But perfection. But again, I ask, and you're more equipped to answer this than I am.
Right.
Like, for me, I see that, and it takes away from Cody, or it takes away from the main event. In this case, Cody versus Roman. Do you need all the gimmicks in this particular match?
Yes, because
why?
It's the 40-year anniversary of WrestleMania. There's like a passing of the torch that's going on here to Cody. You bring back, you know, they wanted to bring back Stone Cold, supposedly. They couldn't work out a deal, so they have The Undertaker do it. It was, if you were watching it live, maybe nobody knew The Undertaker was going to be there. Nobody knew John Cena was going to be running in. Like, that brought things off the charts, the excitement level.
Okay.
So
I get that part of it. I just, usually it would be done in a different match as opposed to the main event with all that kind of
I sort of didn't care. I wanted to see how they got there. But to me, that had to end with Cody finishing this. Like, if they would have had Roman go over, like, it would have been, in a way, in this perverse way, it could have been awesome. But
that's what I would have rooted for. I think they should have. Or just never changed course from whatever they were going to do. Originally.
Well, no, they had to change course because the main event was supposed to be The Rock versus Roman Reigns. So they couldn't. Then Cody's not in it. They had to change course.
Yeah.
The main event was supposed to be The Rock versus Roman Reigns. That's what the main event was supposed to be.
Yeah, I don't get that.
The
but then
fans
they
like,
had Cody beat him at some point.
But not at WrestleMania. It had to be at WrestleMania. That's, you know, that's what it had to be.
Yeah, you Cody crybabies got what you wanted. Congratulations.
You think I was a Cody crybaby before? You should see me now after I attended some event. He did a Make-A-Wish Foundation event. That was the day we taped your podcast.
Yeah,
and I saw Cody.
Phenomenal
guy. We had an awkward, though, Curb Seinfeld moment. Because he's been on the podcast twice.
Yeah.
And both were like great interviews. So when I saw him at this event, you know, did the handshake. He went in for the bro hug. I was not expecting a bro hug from Cody Rhodes. I mean, I didn't think we were there yet in the relationship. He went full, and I gave the awkward shake maneuver into the bro hug, and then it's awkward, but
I was going to say, what? Did you think he remembered you and he didn't? What was going on there? But obviously he did.
I always go on the premise that nobody remembers me.
Same thing. Like, same thing.
Yeah. But yeah, great guy. Great guy. All right, so that was WrestleMania. And I mean, huge, huge numbers. Like, the numbers were for Raw and for Mania were huge. I know people who, you know, Andrew Perloff, good friend of mine, went. Kyle Brandt went. They all were like, you know, into it.
Side note, because you mentioned it, I just saw Perloff this morning at the office.
Yeah.
And he said hello. And he's like, oh, I'm trying to get Jimmy in for lunch. And was like, oh, would you be around maybe to come hang out? And I was like, I don't know. Usually I don't get off till 2, but thanks for the invite. And he's like, well, it wasn't really an invite. And I was like, oh, okay.
Love it. Oh, one last thing I want to say in WrestleMania. The person who's in my top 5 in the WWE is the ring announcer, Samantha Irvin. She tried to announce Cody. She was like crying. She was, her voice cracked. Like, but she had so much to the show with her announcements. She is the best ring announcer since Howard Finkel. And that's a big statement because Howard's the best. But I had to give a
shout out. I don't know who she is, and I'm not familiar with her other than her hearing the final, you know, and new whatever. And I thought it was awful.
No. Well, because she was crying.
Why?
Because Cody finished the story. Oh, my gosh. Cody crybabies. Do you not get it yet still?
Was she crying on purpose?
No.
I don't get it.
Because,
Did Howard Finkel, did the Fink cry when Hogan triumphed over Sergeant Slaughter in WrestleMania 7?
No, because Hogan was the most boring wrestler of all time.
Did Finn cry when Hogan body slammed that big nasty giant and leg dropped him in front of 97,000 at the Pontiac Silverdome?
Probably cried when he had to watch one of his matches with his three moves. The clothesline and the leg drop and go home. Oh my God, he was so boring. All right, Curb. I went into it with Jim Miller earlier in this podcast, but we haven't discussed it. What was your assessment of the Curb series finale?
You're going to kill me, but
You didn't watch it.
I'm three behind. I knowing I was doing this podcast last night, I was going to catch up. I'm like, I got to do this. I watched the first 20 minutes of how many? There were 10 episodes.
Yes.
So I was watching episode 8, which was, what the hell's the name of episode 8? It was a funny name, I thought. Anyway, I was starting to watch it and I fell asleep. And I had no time this morning. I want to bang them out, but I didn't have any time this week.
What were you doing? Okay, so you didn't watch WrestleMania Sunday night and you didn't watch the Curb finale. What were you doing on Sunday night?
Unpacking shit. Oh, actually, Sunday night I worked a little bit. But basically, it's been unpacking, trying to get everything situated.
All right, we'll get into that. Let me ask you this. So have you avoided spoilers or do you know what happens?
I don't know what happened. I avoided spoilers and do not ruin it for me.
So you don't know anything?
No.
You don't know that Larry got shot.
Yeah, get out of here. No, I don't know anything. I'm going to watch, if not today or tonight, like in the very near future, because I want to see it.
You must be on one of your runs where you're not checking Twitter that much if you don't know what happened.
I've seen minimal things about the finale, but no. And I saw like one thing that said, oh, a great tie-in. That was the closest I came to a spoiler. But I have not. Yeah, I have not. But dude, I'm telling you the truth. Now, remember, not only the move, I'm also working two or three jobs at times. So
not on Sundays.
You know what I did Sunday? Do you want to get into it? I went to Home Depot on Sunday. We had that little experience. That was what we did. Nice little fun day at Home Depot and Home Goods.
Did I ever tell you, like, I get anxiety when I go into Home Depot. Like, I get anxiety attacks when I go to Home Depot. Like, I'm not man enough for Home Depot with the nails and the wood and the hammers. Like I'm fine in a Best Buy. Love the electronics. I go around, I touch everything. I put the podcast on all the laptops in Best Buy or the Apple store. I go into Home Depot, I break out into hives. I can't handle it.
And then you go, and we did, and we were there for whatever, however long, and you go up to the register and I've got a bunch of shit in the cart. Big stuff, small stuff. And they're like, oh yeah, right over here, self-checkout. I'm like, I'm not ringing this up. I'm not getting paid to do this. I used to work at Home Depot and get paid to do that. I'm not doing it anymore. I'll wait online. I want a person to ring me up. I'm not ringing myself up with the endless stuff.
But wait, did they only have self-checkout or they had self-checkout and they had cashiers?
They were encouraging people. Like they said, sir, you're next. Come over here. I was like, well, I don't want to ring it up. I'll wait online. He's like, no, I'll do it. He ended up doing it for me, but I refused to do it. I am not ringing myself up.
Is that a policy you have for anywhere or just Home Depot?
No. Like if I go to a supermarket, if I have a couple of things, it's fine. Home Depot, maybe because I work there, but also because of the difficulty of the task. Like I'm not scanning 15 doorknobs or whatever other stuff, you know, the big stuff. Like it's just, I don't want to do it. I also on principle, like why put me to work? I used to do that. It was work.
But if you go into the supermarket, you got like a thing of milk and a thing of eggs.
I could do that. I could handle it. Yeah.
So it's not the principle. It's more about the amount of shit you have.
Maybe it's Home Depot in particular.
You have a Home Depot.
Well, because I worked there, because I did it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
There's an interesting psychological thing there. I'm trying to like think in my head like what that's about. Because you work there, so you don't want to do the self-checkout there. But you know what? Yeah.
Well. If I worked there and I remember vividly had lines and people would come up and dump the stuff on my desk and register whatever, and I would have to scan it. Do you think many years later that I want to go into Home Depot and ring up again like 20 different little doorknob handles or like,
right. I don't. Okay, but let's say you went into Home Depot and you just got one item. Let's say you went in there and you got a
different
piece of
story.
Wood.
I guess that's a different story.
Okay. All right. There's a lot to still do here with your house. You're moved in.
Yeah.
You're moved in. You have cable.
Oh, yeah.
That's the most important thing.
But I don't know if I'm happy with it. Actually, I need to probably talk to you about this off the air, which way to go with it. Do I get Verizon internet and a different, like, do I So here's the thing. I currently have Optimum, and I don't know if you know this, but they now have even newer boxes, which you I only need one box, and even that box is not hardwired. So it's essentially streaming anyway. So if you're going to just go all streaming, then am I better to go with a different internet and different
packages? Box doesn't even get plugged in. Like, it's not even plugged in?
It's plugged into the wall, not to the modem.
Okay. And so are you behind? Like, when you when you watch something, do you feel like you're behind because it's streaming?
No, not necessarily. But, like, you and I are not cord cutters for a reason.
Right.
I want the hard line. I don't want to deal with the app screwing up. And now it's all about, even with me still having cable, it's still, it's mostly streaming. So then I'm like, well, should I maybe just get the better internet and then just go to YouTube TV, let's say, or whatever.
But you say it's mostly streaming. But okay, so let's say hypothetically, you want to watch the Masters on CBS.
Yeah.
You hit channel 2.
Yeah.
And you're telling me it's streaming. It's not.
Because the box is not connected to the hard internet.
But do they give you an option? Like, can you get a hardwire box?
He said this is the new way to do it.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's a dilemma that I'm going through right now and trying to figure out what are the best options here.
Are your TVs all up the way you want them or not yet?
Not 100%. You know, some of the wires are sticking out. We're getting there. But
what's been the biggest issue since you've moved in? Sal is shaking his head for those of you listening and not watching YouTube. Yeah,
it's a lot. I mean, maybe just not having the time. I wish I had 2 weeks off to get everything out of boxes. And we also have workers coming, you know, trying to get stuff done. And, you know, then I'm at work and my wife's calling me about this or that. So it's a lot. We're happy with the house and all that, but it's just a lot. I would say just the living in chaos for, you know, somewhat extended period has been more, where's this thing? Where's that thing? Where are the Q-tips? Where's my sweatshirt? You know, that type of stuff.
Got it. Where have you met your neighbors?
One guy. Yes.
Does he know you're Sal Licata from WFAN?
I don't believe so. No.
Okay. Okay.
It was a nice talk or whatever. I mean, you know, I'm not,
Okay. So let me ask you this. When you meet the neighbor, at some point in time, the conversation's going to be, oh, what do you do for a living? What do you say? You say, I'm a talk show host on FAN?
No. Usually I just say I'm a broadcaster or whatever. Then that could lead to that, but some people let it go. Some people go, oh, a broadcaster, what do you do? Yeah. I talk about sports. Oh, really? Yeah, which team? You know, that's how the conversation goes.
Nobody's letting that go if you say you're a broadcaster.
Some people do. Some people get excited. Some people are like, oh, that's nice. What do you do? And then I say sports. And then from there, it's either, oh, which, you know, do you work for the Yankees or whatever? Or it's like, oh, okay, cool. Like, you either care about it or you don't. But this, I don't think this particular guy cares about it.
All right. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Very good. Yeah.
What's like the biggest thing you got to take care of?
Man, dude, when I tell you it's a laundry list of stuff, like, as soon as we end this podcast, I have to make calls. It's just been one thing after another. This Saturday will probably be the biggest thing. We have to go change our licenses to Jersey. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So
it's gross.
A little Saturday morning at the DMV. Yeah. Can't wait.
The last time I changed my license, I'll never forget as long as I live. It was like a week, 10 days before the entire country got shut down by COVID. And I always thought to myself, and go there, you know, you're waiting like 2 hours and then the entire New York State computer system went down. So I was at the DMV for like 6 hours that day. And I'm like, how did I not get COVID? You're with a million people on top of each other. I'll never understand how I didn't get COVID that day.
I need your thoughts and prayers ahead of this weekend because that's not going to be pleasant Saturday.
So your week, you're not getting much sports viewing in on the weekends.
I've had the Mets and Yankees on, but remember too, the TVs aren't set up the exact way. The couches aren't, like, we're piecing everything together. I'm trying to remember what the hell we did. We definitely did a Home Depot and whatever. Oh, we had somebody was coming in to fix one of the closets. So that was kind of an all day thing. Saturday, we ended up just lounging. Sunday, then we had to go out and do stuff. So it's really just been that.
Did you watch any of the NCAA tournament?
Zero.
Did you watch any Caitlin Clark?
Zero.
Will you watch 1 second of the Masters?
Long shot. I watch the baseball. I watch Mets. I watch Yankees. I watch a little Knicks, a little Rangers.
Let me correct you. You watch the Yankees dominate.
Yes, I have watched it. Oh, are you all in now on the Bronx Bombers? You're back.
Well, I mean, listen, they're beating the Marlins, so you know, yeah. But they are 10-2. I don't like the fact that John Sterling is not in the booth the last few games here with some health issues, apparently.
Yeah,
I'm very nervous about John. All right, I'm nervous.
Yeah.
I don't like putting that game on. It's no disrespect to whoever's doing the games now. I have no issues with those people, but I am all about comfort. When I flip on the station, I need to hear the voice of John Sterling.
Side note that as well, something to do with the Yankees, but not in this particular case. I believe it was Friday night. I get home. I just want to throw on the game. It's on Apple TV or whatever.
Oh, yeah, the Mets were on Apple TV last week.
Yeah, it's so annoying, especially in the setup that you have now with me where I'm trying to find out what the hell's going on. I just want to watch the damn game, and you can't find it.
Yankees are on Amazon Prime tonight.
There you go.
I'm just not going to watch, because here's the other thing, too. Now the NBA playoffs are going to start, so I'm never going to watch any of the Yankee games that are on streaming.
Right.
So I'm just going to watch the NBA, you know. So
it's going to get nuts with the NBA. I love this time of year. NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, obviously baseball, but it's exciting.
All right. So Saturday and Sunday this weekend, Home Depot?
No, Saturday is DMV day.
DMV.
Sunday, I'm actually going to the Met game because they're retiring Doc's number.
Okay.
So I want to go see 16 get hung to the rafters.
All right, so not a ton of, you know, my Dwight Gooden no-hitter story, right?
Oh, God. What?
What?
Nah, the fact that he threw a no-hitter for the Yankees still makes me sick, but go ahead.
I had tickets to that game and didn't go. So,
why?
I'll tell you why. I'll end the segment here. Opening day 1996, if you recall, the Yankees played the Royals in a blizzard.
Yeah.
I was at the game. And back then, the Yankees didn't hate their fans and actually did nice things. So if you sat through the blizzard on opening day, Andy Pettit on the mound, God love him, they gave you free tickets to a game later in the season. Turns out the game that I got the free tickets for was the Doc Gooden no-hitter. However, the day, I don't remember if it was the day of or the day before. I think it was the day before, I left on a road trip with 3, 4, 5 of my friends. We did a road trip across the country, well, not across to middle America,
right,
to see a bunch of baseball stadiums. We saw the old riverfront in Pittsburgh. I was in the old river. Three Rivers was Pittsburgh.
Yes.
Right. So the first night of that trip, I was in Three Rivers. The second night of that trip, I was in the old riverfront stadium in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
I watched the Reds and the Rockies. I bet over 8.5. The game ended 5-3. And Doc Gooden was in the Bronx throwing a no-hitter with the tickets that I had that I didn't. I gave them to my brother or whatever.
Well, there you go. At least he went.
No, he didn't go.
Oh.
I forgot why he didn't go. And that's why I always remember the Doc Gooden no-hitter, because I was in Cincinnati watching the Reds-Rockies play a 5-3 game where I had the over 8.5.
And when you bet that over, did you use DraftKings or what were you using?
No, my friend Petey, who was a degenerate who got me into gambling, we had a call from a payphone. And we had to give up. Like, I remember my name. We had bookies. I had a call and my nickname was like Michelob 21 or something like that. Give me 5 times on the Reds, over 8 with the Rock, you know, a payphone in the middle of Cincinnati to place my wages.
Oh,
it's not
cool.
Like now. Yeah, no DraftKings back then.
Michelob. So,
yeah, that was my name with the bookie. You had a code name.
The good old days.
Well, in a way they were, because literally the bookie was done at 7 o'clock when first pitch started. So you couldn't be doing all the live betting. Right. Oh, let me chase with the West Coast. Like, you had your bets in and that was it for the night. So it was... I mean, there's good and bad things about both ways on that. So, all right, Sal. Well, enjoy the DMV Saturday. Glad you're back. Glad Train of Thoughts is back.
Very.
Appreciate you sticking in.
I'm happy for you. I know a lot of people, even that you don't know, they text me, hey, how's Jimmy going to do? I think it'd be all right. So everybody is happy that you landed in a great spot and you're better off for it.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Good luck with getting the cable situated, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right.
All right. All right. My many thanks to Jim Miller, Dan Rappaport, Sal Licata. My thanks to you for listening. If you missed any recent episodes of SI Media with Jimmy Traina, check them out in the archives. Chris Mad Dog Russo was on the podcast last week. Brian Curtis of The Ringer, Dan Orlovsky of ESPN were recent guests as well. If you missed any of those, check them out and subscribe to SI Media with Jimmy Traina. Leave a review on Apple as well. Helps tremendously. All right. That wraps it up. We'll see you next week. Stay safe and take care.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.